Hey guys, it's Asia Moore and welcome to the Black Girl in CLE podcast. Stay tuned to find out who or what we're talking about today. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Asia. Welcome to Black Girl in CLE. I am here with Miss Asila Sharif.
Hi everybody.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for coming. Yeah. I've really been wanting you to come and talk to, you know, our listeners about what it is that you do and, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
So, can you tell the people what exactly you do? We know you work for Caramu.
Yes, I work for Caramu. So, Asila, like you said, is my name, Asila Sharif. I'm the Director of Operations and Community Engagement at Caramu House. And then people go, what does that mean?
Right.
And I just say I do a lot of work. I work really hard. And whatever our president and CEO, Tony Saez, says, I try to make it come to fruition. So my role encompasses operations organization-wide. So we have three product lines. They are theater, mm-hmm. which is our main brand, arts education, and community programs. So operations across those three product lines. And in addition to that, my role encompasses programming. So I'm making sure that we are curating a comprehensive, socially and culturally responsive set of arts experiences for the community.
Right.
And then making sure that we're providing some really good quality arts education classes for lifelong learners.
Ooh.
I know.
I love that. Yay. So, like, specifically, though, like, what kind of classes, what sort of programs? I find that there are a lot of artists, and they never know where to go. Like, there mm-hmm. are a lot of actors and just people who want to get into performing arts, and I'm like, so you don't know about Caramu House?
Yeah.
Wow, it's been here forever.
Yeah. You know, that's the fun of working at Caramu. First of all, you find out that everyone you meet, let me not say everyone because I'm going to negate what you just said. A lot of people you meet have a Caramu story. Mm-hmm. So you meet them and there's like half the population that you go, Caramu. And they go, oh my God, my grandma used to bring me there. And my aunt had me in tap class. And my sister used to be in the plays. So some people have these layered connections. Mm-hmm. And then you have people that go, what's that?
No, seriously. There's no in between.
Yeah. So which that's funny for us because Caramu as a 104-year-old institution
mm-hmm.
who has been really that has been cranking out some amazing artists and preparing amazing artists. It just provides an opportunity for us to share the story. So when we talk about programming and as it relates to arts education specifically, we focus on the performing arts. So we're focusing on drama, theater together, right? Vocal, music, and dance. Okay. So we're working on helping people attain technique and fundamentals as it relates to kind of taking a pathway to the stage.
Right.
So our goal, of course, is to be able to prepare the next round of performers, next round of dancers, next round of theater artists, next round of vocal music practitioners, so that they can do this work on another level if they want. So we'd love to see them on our stages. We'd love to see them go to post-secondary education somewhere. We'd love to see them go into pre-professional apprenticeships. Or we'd like to just see them be amazing human beings in whatever field of endeavor they choose. So really for us, it's about the whole person. That's the arts education. As it relates to, there's access in there for everyone, right? So there are, you know, workshops that are focus towards those acting professionals who are already in practice,
right?
But that need maybe some focus technique as it relates to film or commercials or something like that. So there's different entry points. We do have many folks that come to us for the first time, so they've never really done it, but they've been looking for their entry. They've been looking for their opportunity to try theater. And I think navigate and explore the discipline and the skills that come along with that. So we find a lot of professionals that say, I have to do a lot of public speaking. I think I want to take a theater class so I can learn how to just be present in a space. So many entry points for the performing arts study that we provide. It is skill-based. It is rigorous. We work to provide mastery instruction for people. So we want people to understand that when they come to study or to train at Caramu House, it's not just kind of some round-the-way class you're taking, right? We're really trying to prepare you. We're making sure that we have professional teaching artists and practitioners in front of our students, our learners, to make sure that they're bringing the most up-to-date industry standards to the people. right? So we want you, we don't want you going away and being like, oh, I took classes at Caramel. And they say, oh, what's, tell me about this part of your, you know, acting technique. What techniques have you studied? And you'd be like, oh, I don't know. They just taught me how to get up and practice my emotions. Like, we want people to be able to say, I've studied Stanislavski's technique. You know, I've studied and understand vocabulary as it relates to acting or dance, understanding what different techniques are, how I'm supposed to use my body. We want people to be knowledgeable practitioners.
I love that. So essentially, like, helping the artist find, like, their sweet spot, like, just making sure that they birth that
helping talent. Them on the journey.
Yeah, I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah. Y'all doing it. What other things? Okay, so Caramel just got a $2 million grant for renovation, which helped build the new theater. So tell me a little bit about that. I remember the groundbreaking, which was an amazing event, by the way, that I know that you did your thing, okay? I had a great time.
We had a good time. Yeah, in the past couple of months, Caramel has celebrated some of the largest, I think they have been the largest contributions to the institution, which are certainly, I mean, a testament to the amazing legacy of the institution and also to the current leadership. We have an amazing CEO, president and CEO right now, Tony Sayas, who came to Caramel from the school district from 15 years as a Department of Arts Education director. But he's a person who just understands artistic vision, and he's able to combine those things with business philosophy. So when you talk about creating a sustainable organization, he just gets putting those puzzle pieces together, and he understands putting together the right team to push those things forward. So no doubt it, you know, the philanthropic community has expressed trust in that vision and in what they see happening in the direction at Caramel House currently. So yeah, those amazing gifts have come to support further capital improvements. As theater is Caramel's brand, those resources really are earmarked to continue to make sure that theater wing of the building, that people come there and are able to experience a 21st century, you know, experience. So yes, you're coming into a neighborhood, right? A great historic neighborhood in Cleveland. It's not downtown, it's not the West Side, and it's not all these other places, but it is the Fairfax neighborhood.
Right.
And we feel like you should be able to come there and feel comfortable and feel safe and have the highest technology when it comes to experiencing the arts experiences there are going to be. So whether they're productions or concerts, whatever they are,
right,
those funds and those investments are going towards making sure community continues to have a really stellar experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I mean, this is necessary.
It's beautiful. It was necessary. It was. Yeah. But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, for the groundbreaking, you guys had Vanessa Bell Calloway come down.
So last year, you were around doing some photography for us. Yeah, Asia. We had last year was our benefit, and we were able to celebrate inductions into the Caramel Hall of Fame. So Vanessa Bell Calloway, being a Caramel alum, was inducted and was able to stay for a few more weeks and put her one woman show up.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was Zora Neale Hurston story, which was amazing. And I think it was just exciting because people were able to hear her share her story about, like, yeah, I grew up on Golden, I think is the street, which is like a couple blocks around a corner somewhere from where we are at Caramel House. And she just talked about how when she found Caramel, it was like the one place her family could afford to bring her to take dance classes. Mm-hmm. And she got in it, and it was dance, and then it was drama, and then they had to pry her out on most nights. So for someone to have reached such amazing success in their career, and for our young ones and our middle ones, you know, to hear, oh, wow, like she started here, she studied here, she committed herself, it's a reminder that you too can do those things.
Facts.
So, yeah.
That was good to have her here. That was nice.
I'm talking about a down-to-earth person too, just like
regular. I know. She's like mad cool. Yeah. Shout out to her.
Yeah.
Also, shameless plug, we're reading Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God for the book club. It's the first one. It starts on the 25th.
Nice.
So, come out, sign up for that. I'm hosting that one. So, yes.
That's all right. I think I first read that book my junior year, maybe. of high school. Did I still read that book in high school?
Anymore? I don't think so. Don't My mother, she gave me the book. She's like, here, we went on a road trip.
Yeah.
And she was like, nah, we're getting rid of the electronics. She's like, you're going to read this book. Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to read this. I don't know what this is. It's an important
literary contribution, for sure.
And I read it, and it is my favorite book, like, to date.
Yeah.
So. It's an
important one.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that one. Let's see what else. So, you're a dancer. First of all, can I just say,
yeah.
I met Mrs. Sela at Tri-C. She was my dance teacher. She's my African dance teacher. Wonderful class. We had a lot of fun. Are you still teaching?
Yeah, no.
No.
I'm not right now. And I'm working to create space to get back into the classroom. So one of my joys really is sharing dance. I feel like I've been fortunate to be able to have a career, performing career, and I've been able to have a teaching career. But in the last couple of years, really right since I got to Karamu, I left Karamu from running the dance department at Cleveland School of the Arts, and so I was still kind of in it. But since that, 2015, I really have done like no teaching, maybe one or two workshops here and there, but I really enjoy that, so I'm trying to create that space. We used to have a lot of fun in the Tri-C class.
We had a lot of fun. And yeah. I always loved the shows at the end of the semester.
Yeah.
Like, everybody just really got into that. And African dance, period, because I actually did start out dancing at Karamu as well. My mother found Karamu because she was like, okay, yeah, we see you doing a lot. Like, we got to figure out how to channel this. So, sign me up for dance class.
Yep.
That was it.
Yeah. Well, I'm a transplant. I'm from West Palm Beach. And so when I first moved to Cleveland, I was looking for how do I get involved? Like, how do I get into the community? So for me, that means find a dance class. And somehow on the Google or something, I learned, oh, Karamu House. I called, showed up one Saturday, like, I'm here for the African class. So that was like my first foray into finding dance here. I subsequently ended up finding a company that's no longer here, but that was very transformative for me, Cleveland Contemporary Dance Theater, which was Cleveland's black dance company.
Oh my gosh.
That was here for about 10 years under Michael Metcalf. He was a Cleveland School of the Arts graduate, went away and danced it in Denver and in Philly and all these different places. He had a great professional career, and then he came back to Cleveland and started a dance company. So I eventually found him, but it was kind of through my journey to Karamu first.
So how did you end up in Cleveland? You said you're a transplant. So, like, when did you move here?
Yeah, girl, I met a man.
Oh, cute.
Right. The things we do.
You know,
things
I know.
We do. Yeah, I left Florida and came here because of that relationship at the time. But I just thought, whoa, like, Cleveland, I'm going to go to the Midwest. And I'm going to have winter. It's going to be amazing. People are like, why are you moving to Cleveland? I still got friends and family who do not understand, like, how just on the strength of climate, like, how can you live there? I don't understand it. But what I found, because I've since that time, I've come and gone from Cleveland a few times, but I continue to come back, and people are just always like, why do you come back? And I have to tell them, like, the arts community here is pretty darn special. So there are a lot of places that you can't practice your artistry at a high level and just do that. So I found that, you know, being an artist here, folks don't have to work a part-time job somewhere else. You can if you want to,
right?
But you don't have to be a waiter or work at a bar or a grocery store. Like, you can legit just practice your art, and there are ways for you economically to sustain yourself, and you can own a home and you can have a car. And in other cities, artists just are not able to do those things. Right? So Cleveland is a place where the philanthropic community is such that it supports artists, understands the importance for artists to get that kind of support, and understands how artists contribute to the economic picture overall.
Right.
And while there is still work to be done, I feel like that awareness is here. And so people continue to fight for opportunities for artists to just be able to be their creative selves.
Yeah,
I think a lot of us benefit from that, even maybe if we don't realize it.
We really do, actually. And it's crazy because very much recently, I had different feelings about Cleveland, even though I've been here pretty much forever. And I was just like, you know, I think I'm ready to go. And I think the longer I really sat and thought about it, and the deeper I got into my craft, like you said, I'm like, I started finding, like, my people. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I became a lot more comfortable to be here. I was a lot happier to be here because I go back and forth to, like, a New York or, like, a Philly. And it's just like, oh, it's expensive here. And, like, it's a lot of competition. And not to say that there's not a lot of competition in Cleveland, but it's just something different.
Yeah, there's a lot of amazing artists here. And I think we also have the benefit of being in a place where you can get a cheap enough flight to all those places, right? So you can, like you said, you can jump on a bus or get on a plane and get to New York and get to D.C. and get to Chicago. You can get to all those places and you can still, I don't think it stops us from being artists that work in multiple places, mm-hmm. but it's a good, solid home base that is manageable.
Facts.
It's manageable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of difference in the world.
It definitely does.
So as a dancer, I never wanted to live in New York. I didn't want that rush. I didn't want that always on it, rushing from gig to gig. That never excited me.
Right.
So I was excited when I was able to have an opportunity here. And then my opportunity here led to my next opportunity, touring opportunity. It had me based in D.C. But I was able to come back and forth to Cleveland so much because they're so close.
Right.
So I didn't miss not having that kind of New York super duper metropolitan experience. And I think it's still okay if you decide you're going to do that one day, right? But you know that you always will have an artistic home here.
Facts. You know? Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was like. Cleveland will always be home base. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to build my legacy anywhere else than Cleveland.
There you go, just legacy. Like, come on.
Yeah. But seriously, like, I didn't want to do that. So. Like, this is where I'm from. Cleveland has, like you said, a lot of growing to do, and I think that some people would say, like, the Cleveland art community is lacking, but to me, there are pockets that just, there are opportunities to be explored. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not gonna just, you know, surface. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's, how can I put this, an art to being able to find those instead of just, like, here they are.
Sure. I think you said something really important when you just spoke of legacy. So legacy is really important to me. And I think we have to think of our life contributions in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that Cleveland is one of those cities that sometimes suffers from the talent going away. The talent gets nourished and gets what it gets here and gets its foundation and gets on its legs.
Yes.
And then it leaves. And those contributions are never put back into that place that built that person up.
Right? True.
And so I think this is one of those places where it's a good idea for the homegrown talent to consider, even if you are going to go away and sharpen your iron some more or get some other skills and some other life experience. I all the way support that, but don't be afraid to come back and bring it back.
True.
Because that's how you then begin to develop the next generation of and legacy building and legacy building and legacy building. And when these littles don't see, Asia, black girl, photographer, professional, doing her thing. Mm-hmm. If they don't see that, they don't know they can do that.
Yes. Yes. And that is
Then what? Right?
Right.
Then
what we have. And that's why I feel like you have a lot of kids who complain, like, I don't want to be here. Like, that's literally all I hear is, like, I don't want to be here. I have to get out in order for my art to thrive. He was like, actually, you don't. Like, you don't.
Yeah, get out and get some experience, but then come back and get back to your community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. What school did you go to?
I went to Florida State.
Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In Tallahassee. So, North Florida. It's kind of like South Georgia, but.
You studied dance there?
So, I danced while I was there, but I didn't study dance there. I attended the Palm Beach County School of the Arts, so I was at a performing arts school, like one here. I was a dance major there. I actually started off as a creative writing major.
Oh.
That was my first, like, love.
You right?
And then I do. I'm out of practice, but I do. So, I learned about, at this school at the time, we started as seventh graders. So, every seventh grader had to go through and experience every arts discipline.
Wow.
They called it the wheel. So it was like, you're here and you're in your discipline of choice, but you're going to go through all of them. Well, when I got to the dance, my 9 weeks in dance, that was life changing for me. I had always been a mover.
Yeah.
Like, I was the girl who would, you know, be at the park with the girlfriends and we making up dances and cheers.
Aww.
So I was always into that. But I found the opportunity to study formally and it lit me up. It rocked my socks completely. I was a dance major from then on out. So I didn't study dance in college because I kind of felt like I was always going to find my way to dance. I was always going to find classes. I was always going to find performance opportunities. And I wanted to study something different. So I actually studied exercise science when I was in school, in nutrition and fitness, because it was a complement to that. And then even when I went to graduate school, I didn't do an MFA in dance. I actually did my graduate work in arts administration. Because by that time, it was interesting to me how arts and nonprofits worked, how they functioned, how they dealt with money and finance became extremely intriguing from my first foray into the nonprofit arts world as a dancer. I ended up becoming the liaison to the board for the dance company. And that just opened my eyes to a whole nother world of how do these organizations function? How do they behave? And what do we need to do to make sure they are sustainable? That was like my interest was peaked at that point.
And you're there.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. It's funny how you end up where you end up. But it's all been aligned.
Yeah. No, it's I all feel been that.
Aligned. Yeah.
I feel that.
I'm fortunate in that, I feel.
That is super awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, you said you write. Is that the only other art form that you have? Do you do, like, poetry? Do you write short stories? Do you paint?
So, okay. So, no, I don't paint. Well, I used to really like to write fiction, short stories. And it's so funny when I think about this. This same memory comes back to me every time. I had one of my creative writing instructors. His name was Mr. Yunt. Who knows where Mr. Yunt is now? This is like seventh grade. But I can remember hating the practice of free writing. Mm-hmm. So in his class, the first 20 minutes, like, it was mandatory that you already knew, come in, open your journal, and get to writing. And being such a young writer, I would just be so obstinate when it came time to having to do this. Some days I just didn't want to do it.
Right.
I don't want to sit here and write this. And I can remember times where he was walking around the room kind of looking over everyone's shoulder, and I would be writing like, ugh, I do not want to write this today. I can't stand this class. I know Mr. Young is looking over my shoulder as I'm writing this stuff. I like just blah, blah, blahing on. But now, of course, I can see the importance of that practice is important. The same way I can go into a dance studio and I do ballet, and ballet starts the same way. I don't care where you're taking the class, what country, what day. It starts the same way every time.
Yep.
And it took for me to go through experiences later to realize, oh, like that was kind of important.
That was.
That was kind of important. So yeah, I really did used to like writing. The most writing I do now is in my journal, and that's inconsistent. But I think I tell pretty good stories. Pretty good stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty descriptive. So I guess that's where it kind of
I
still
like
fits
that
in.
Though. Because you have people who tell the. And then you don't even give too much of a description. You give just enough. People are like, okay, we are with you. Because you know people who will tell, like, just, girl, get to the point. Like, yeah. That's me.
Yeah. So I want to learn an instrument, though. I took a few years ago, I started taking snare drum lessons.
What?
I'm inconsistent though. Like, I'm a terrible music student. And then that's probably been about 5 years. And then 2 years ago, maybe three by now, I started to learn the bass, the upright bass, because Esperanza.
Right.
So I still have my bass available. And I, one of the, funny enough, one of the musicians who plays bass for some of the productions at Caramu said he would give me lessons. So I think I'm going to start my upright bass lessons
again. You should.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That's a thing. Like,
music's cool, and I think string instruments really remind me of dance. There's so much movement. Mm-hmm. Like, when I go to the orchestra, I like to just watch the string, because they just move so much. Their upper bodies are always in motion when they play. It makes me think of dance and movement, and so I would love to just, like, be able to play a song.
Right.
On the upright bass. Just a song.
Right. Just like, I got the song. Mm-hmm. It's like, I got one song
a
for
song.
You.
A song.
Don't play nothing else.
My Esperanza moment one way or another.
No, seriously, you could do that at Caribou.
You know, don't worry, when I have my recital, I'm gonna invite all of y'all.
Yeah,
you hear that, Black Girls in CLE? All of you. Y'all better come.
Are you reading anything currently?
Yes.
What are you
I feel
reading?
Like I'm always a person reading five books and finishing none of them. But I just got one that is pretty interesting, and it's called I Will Teach You How to Be Rich.
Mm.
It's a bestseller. It has all of these anecdotal testimonials in the book. So this man, this is his like real life approach to helping people understand finance, personal finance and economics. He's kind of breaking down like all the different ways people have told us how we have to look at finance and economics, and explaining to us how like, y'all, it's not that deep. You don't have to understand all those really, really technical things and go into all this minutia. This is like 1, 2, 3 steps on how you can do this. And he has all these testimonials where people are saying how going through his process and his cycle have helped them get their debt down, get the debt gone. Like, they started and 3 years later they have like this many hundreds of thousands in their 401k. It's just like real practical stuff. So I'm reading that and excited about it because finance is just one of those areas in my life, child. If I could just stop buying the shoes, you know, I could get my life together.
I feel that.
So I'm on this like personal finance journey. Mm-hmm. And this one, like, I'm excited about reading. So I'm moving through that. Is there something else I'm reading that's fun? There's like 5,000 books open on my Kindle that are all in, just in process.
So you can read on the Kindle? I'm like, I have to hold it.
I got the paper book for this one that I just got.
Okay.
I got that. Okay. I have to flip through that one.
Because I can't read stuff on like, no.
It's hard to take your notes and stuff. You can't fold the pages down. Yeah. It's tricky. I haven't mastered that.
Yeah,
maybe, and I like, that's why I don't finish them as much.
That could be, maybe. That might be a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I like to annotate, so it's hard. Like, I like to write stuff or highlight things. Yeah. So, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, it's a new adventure. It's, I find that the impatient part of me, when I can just go, ooh, Kindle download, is like, yay. But then I still will find myself wanting to go out and buy the book.
Yeah.
Because you just want to hold it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's
technically
now nostalgic. Because nobody is like, everybody's just like, I'll read it on my phone. Yeah, or I'll listen to it.
You're right.
And I can't just.
That's why I got readers now. Can't see nothing. It's crazy.
Let's talk about the recent tragedy of Miss Toni Morrison dying. So, like, what was your favorite Toni Morrison book? Do you have like a quote? Like,
you know,
do you have a story?
Since her transition, I had been trying to figure out. I feel like on social media, I was bombarded with everyone else's favorite quotes and favorite this and favorite that. And I don't know if I'd really still have taken the time to figure out what of her works was the most meaningful for me, but I can remember when I was introduced to her work, and that was, again, high school for me. It was, so it was kind of late. But when I was introduced to her work, feeling like what I was reading resonated with me.
Right.
Like one of the first times ever in your life, right, where you feel like, okay, this lady, like, must know my grandma.
Right.
Because these things that I'm reading, these concepts that I'm exploring and navigating through her text felt familiar. Mm-hmm. Such a loss. Such a great, great loss.
Seriously.
But how fortunate are we to have had her here, to leave the gifts that she left us with. And you talk about legacy. Like, we have something, some things, many somethings that we can pass down. Like, she never has to be forgotten.
Nope.
She never has to be forgotten. Her contributions never have to be forgotten. Just the fact that she, I don't know if I want to say, like, lit fire to so many black girls.
But that's the truth, though.
It's just like, just talking about leaving a mark.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about, what am I going to leave behind? Like, she did that.
She did.
She can rest well wherever she is because she did that.
I feel like there's this unspoken, like, ritual of black women just passing down books that you have to read. Like, because, like I said, with Their Eyes Were Watching God, like, my mother gave me that. I had an 8th grade teacher who gave me The Bluest Eye. It was a gift. I think it was for 8th grade graduation, and she was like, you need to read this.
Do you have, what's your favorite? Do you have a favorite Toni Morrison?
It's The Bluest Eye. Okay. Like, all day.
Yeah.
Just, it was just a great book. It was amazing.
You're going to make me explore this question for myself later, finally, to have to see, is there one that I feel like is my one.
Shani, you have one.
I do.
Which one is yours?
Mine is Sula.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was the book that introduced me to. I think the book that introduced you to her is the book.
Is the one. Yeah.
So I started The Bluest Eyes, and, you know, because her, the gift of her writing is that the person you meet first is not the main character.
Truth.
They just happen to be like, the main character just happens to be the person that knows the main character. Like, you meet this person, and so in Sula, like, we meet Sula along the way. And so, not knowing that about Toni Morrison, when I started The Bluest Eyes, I'm like, what is this about? Who is this? Like, and who, like, I couldn't get the characters. And then I'm like, oh, once I realized that that's how she writes, you know, that first character we meet or is not the most important person, then I started to get it. But Sula, like, I can remember the day I read it, the way I read it. You know, I was in, I can tell you the class I read it in.
Oh, wow.
Just like, you remember this, that book was an eighth grade present.
See, I love that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we have to continue to pass these books down to people who, A, might not know it, and the people who, like, no, you need to read it.
Well, think about it. Are they, what reading lists are these things on, and who is...
We're going to make one.
Who is holding anybody accountable for this level of study? You know what I'm saying?
True.
So we do. We have to, we have to take that responsibility.
Yes, we do. We have Riesling and Reading.
Reading and Riesling.
Yes.
And then on the Be Ready side, I run a business book club.
Oh, wow.
We're going through, like, Think and Grow Rich right now via Zoom.
Come on, technology.
No, seriously.
Yeah, I mean.
Smart.
Like, these things need to happen.
Because we're not reading.
We're not.
No.
And so my year, I'm not taking over your interview.
No, you're
my
fine.
My whole
please, go
motto
ahead.
This year is the secrets in the book. So if you think about all the generations before, it was book reading and newspaper. Like, but newspapers were different than they were. But if you wanted to learn something, it was in the books.
Yeah.
And so even when I was reading Think and Grow Rich, I wanted to go back to the original text. Because we start to water down, then it's so-and-so's translation of what it should mean. And if you want to try to apply it, what was said then? Because that's what people read. That's when people got their finances together. That's when people understood how to do ABC. You don't need the Shana interpretation of what I read. You need to go back to the original text.
Right.
And so, but Toni Morrison, like, that text stands the test of time. Same with Zora Neale.
Yep.
You know, so.
It's in the book.
So true.
The answers are always in the book.
Yeah.
So true. We are just so used to, like, the microwave reading now, right? So you read a little article that's.
Somebody,
2 inches long.
And it's somebody's summary.
Yeah.
Longer
article.
Yeah.
And there's, like, no detail. And I think also the problem is that attention spans are, like, 2 seconds. I feel like I have the attention span of a squirrel. Like, this is, it's hard. And I feel like I use reading as a way to kind of, like, help
balance.
That.
Yeah, it's balance. That's true. There's a lot of discipline, I think, that comes from just when you take it slow and read that. We've lost. We've lost the art of that moving slowly.
And the creativity, because you have to conjure the pictures.
Exactly.
In your head. So I'm sure you've seen a movie turn to a book from a book, and you're like, that's not what they look like.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You know, case in point, even Waiting to Exhale.
You're right.
You know, when you read that, you're like.
Can you remember reading that, and then the movie came, the film came out? I know. Yes.
But even then, there was a, like you said, a black girl statement that we're all going to read this Waiting to Exhale book.
Yeah.
Before there was even an idea of a movie, we all read the book.
Right.
Exactly.
And then you're like, I didn't have Bernadette picture in that.
That's right.
I guess she worked.
That's
right. Because we had used that creativity, and I think that's what hinders us, because we don't, you know, now you're giving us a picture in the article.
You don't use the muscle anymore.
That's what's going to
say. And we were excited because... We saw ourselves in those stories.
Yeah.
Our mama, our auntie, we saw somebody we knew.
That's who you pictured as a character. Like, that's Janie right there, my aunt so-and-so.
Yep.
That's definitely what
that's
it is.
That's so funny. One of my girlfriends I went to high school with is now an author for young folks' books. She is a culturally responsive series, Anna and Andrew. Her name is Christine Platt-Patrick. And she just talks about representation. Like, representation is so, so, so important.
True.
And she's written, her first book was not youth, I don't know, what do you call it, youth literature. It was a fiction piece, really powerful. And of course, right now, I'm drawing a complete blank on it. I'm going to tell y'all later when I remember. Her first book was amazing. And it had to do with kind of telling the stories of, was it hurricanes? And kind of how this kind of ideal that the hurricanes come from the fact that you know, the tortured souls from during like the slave trade. So she really is, she writes culturally responsive literature. Wow. But I bring up this point about Anna and Andrew. She has Anna and Andrew doing all these really amazing things, like going to Carnival for Trinidad for Carnival. They go to the African American Smithsonian, and people send her photos because their children are so excited to read these books because they see these, you know, these illustrations of these little black kids with curly hair. And it really is important to see yourself in the things that you are ingesting.
Yes.
You got to see yourself to get excited about it. Mm-hmm. That moment that you just talked about waiting to exhale just brought all that back to me. I was just like, oh my gosh, this movie about these amazing black women.
And
you knew
that guy. And that's the premise of Black Girl. Because, you know, when you think about your bloggers, there weren't many of us. You know, somebody even told me black girls don't read blogs. You have to be a YouTuber. And I'm like, we can read, why not? You know, but because no one was reading that, you weren't seeing yourself in those places.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like you said, representation matters. Mm-hmm. Do I even want to go to that space? Because I don't ever see anybody talking about it in my circle. Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of what you do, because some of the things I see you do, I'd be like, oh, sure, no. And then it makes you rethink, oh, okay, I guess I could check that out. But you're creating space. You're creating space where it wasn't before. And so, yeah, I've seen a couple things that you post sometimes that I'd be like, okay.
Like, I went there?
Yeah, yes. I wouldn't have made that choice, but I guess I can. Next time I can check it out.
Yeah.
And so that does, and it makes our world that much bigger, right? It makes our experience that much greater. It's important.
Yeah, I think because we start letting people tell us where to go, same with by not reading, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gazillion books out there that you can choose from. But, you know, with TV, at 8 o'clock, we all watch this show.
Exactly.
Like, if it's Thursday, you must watch Grey's Anatomy on Thursdays.
Right.
I don't know what else comes on against Grey's Anatomy, but society says that is what I'm watching. I also must watch Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But then at that point, someone is painting the picture of this reality for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I go to a book, I'm like, do I want to read about money? Do I want to read about this? Do I want to revisit Waiting to Exhale?
Right.
Do I want to visit? And so you get your control back, but also you start being able to recreate that spark and where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because even on the cultural piece, you know, the commercials that come on tell you where to go. This is where to be. This is the back to school jam.
Mm-hmm.
This is a that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's all you know,
mm-hmm.
and there's a whole world that we're not seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So I always look for, what are we not seeing? That's
the
question I always ask myself.
Well, I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important.
This book looks cool, by the way.
Yeah, it's a set of four.
Yeah.
And she just completed another project. So yeah, I brought a set. I don't have any. Well, yeah, I do. I brought a set for my little cousins.
Oh.
And I bought a set for me. I enjoyed reading them. I was like, okay, Anna and Andrew.
We'll put the link in the notes.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Support.
I'm definitely trying to supporting always.
Oh,
that's very cute.
Yes. Oh my
god. So yeah, representation.
Are these chapter books?
Representation.
And for teachers, it's Align the Common Core. I read that.
Yes. Yeah.
I used to be a teacher, so.
Okay. Yeah.
Put them in your classroom.
But this speaks to, you know, our generations and our understanding of our place and the work we have to do to create our own legacies. Mm-hmm. So our stories have to be there.
So let me just
tell
you, every time you say legacy, I smile because that is like the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I told you, I think when I saw you, we're doing this event, and that's one of the whole points is let's talk about the legacy we live behind as black entrepreneurs in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often, like, I'll create a business. Okay, well, I'm getting old. I'll retire. I'll close it. No. Pass
that
down to someone. Or, like, you think about the generations of Hot Sauce Williams.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
We all know that. You know?
Yeah.
And how, like, I learned it from my mom and my grandma, you know, and so it just went along.
Yeah. You know what? I've been talking with a lot of, I want to say a lot. I don't know a lot. But I've talked with a few kind of, they seasoned, right? They're not by any means old.
Mm-hmm.
But I will call them, you know, black women who have made their marks in the business world here in Cleveland. And I talk about, does your child want to? And I hear so much of, the kids don't want this business. The kids don't want this business. I've heard that so many times for, you know, companies or businesses that I feel like in my limited time in Cleveland, I know are important to this city. And you just think, wow, like what? So me as 40, I go, what do you mean? I would never pass up that kind of opportunity. But I guess in our different ways, you know, some of the younger ones that are coming up, they want to make their own path. And I don't want to say they don't understand legacy, because I'm sure they do. You've grown up in this environment. Mm-hmm. But there's some disconnect somewhere. I feel like if we're unable to help our young people see that, why it's really important that you take this on and move it forward.
But part of that is a conversation you have earlier. Like, I've seen people say, like, I don't want the house when mom, you know, like, yeah. But you do want the house.
Right.
But, so my son one day, when I was first starting Be Ready, he came and he says, something like, which company is mine? That Be Ready and Black Girl. And I'm like, excuse me? You know, it's like day three of the business. I'm like, okay. And I said, well, which company do you want? So then, you know, he's probably, I think, 11 at the time, and we're having this conversation about which company you want to run.
Yeah.
At some point. Because he had been in a school where everybody's granddad and dad are someone. And so you're growing up with the expectation that this is going to be your business.
Exactly.
As opposed to, I'm doing this business, that's just what mom does. And now, hey, you want this business? No, all that hard work you've been doing?
Exactly.
You're not being raised in the business.
Okay, so that's actually what I was going to say, is like, how are they being incorporated into the business? Right. Like, did they grow up in it? Did they work it? Have you guys had any, like, events that they could participate in? Mm-hmm. So I have a business, Art Amore LLC, mm-hmm. and so that's my photography business. So what I did, I got Tristan a camera. I'm like, guess what, homie?
Yeah.
You taking pictures. That's right. What we do. We are a picture-taking family. So... Right. Now I hear him, so when are we doing another photo shoot?
Right.
I've just been around taking pictures.
Right.
Like, he wants to do that.
Yeah.
So I think it's like getting that young, instead of just like, oh, well, I'm old, it's your turn.
Right.
It's just kind of like, I don't know nothing about this. Mm-hmm. I couldn't grow with it. It's not, they don't care about it as much.
Mm-hmm. Or know about it to care. Or know.
Right. Yeah. Like, if I wasn't involved, why would I care? Like, I got my own thing going
on. I agree. And I think... we can't make it optional. Like, I don't know what my gold is going to be when I strike this whatever I'm supposed to do entrepreneurially. But whatever it is, I feel like, young person, you don't have an option to not. And I stand behind it. I don't care what y'all out there say about you. So gotta let them make up their minds. Yeah, I hear that. You can have your own thing too.
Yes.
But I think you also have to understand that we have spent some energy. We family collectively have spent energy in creating something here.
Right.
It is important for us to figure out the strategy for it to move forward. And it's not going to be just, oh, mama gone, it's over.
Right.
My strategy, and I've seen somebody do it, is the whole point is that your business is the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're dry cleaner A, you know, it's the idea
right.
of more businesses.
Exactly.
If son wants to open a donut shop, it needs to be family corporation.
It's the Black Girl and CLE Donut Company.
Right.
No, it's everything. It's right. Black Girl Donut. It's Black Girl Bookstore.
Right. Black girl Coffee.
Right.
Like,
so
which
every
one?
Kid can have a business.
Exactly.
You can open the grocery store, Black Girl Business Store.
Exactly.
And what have you, but it's all under that same family, the Johnson family.
Yep.
You know, when you think about the ones, the Johnson Publishing, they had the Jet, mm-hmm. they had the Ebony, they had all those things. Mm-hmm. You know, if
exactly.
you said, I want to open a sports magazine, you do a sports magazine,
mm-hmm.
but it's still under that family,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just like more land.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want these acres. Okay, well, I don't want to get rid of my acres for your acres.
Exactly.
We just have all these acres.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, for me, entrepreneurship is just super important for kids and adults, because that's the only way you can leave legacy.
How do you think if you're thinking back now, how did you get your son to grasp that concept of legacy?
He came to me. So he was, like I said, he was at a school, one of our local private boys schools, very upper echelon.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would come home and say, you know, so-and-so's grandfather is such and such, you know, of that company, you know, so-and-so's dad is that. And so, you know, on the one end, he was looking for, like, who are we?
Mm.
What's our stuff? You know, that's right. so-and-so's dad's business right there. And mm-hmm. he's going to grow up and, like, because at that point, he was seeing them, like, goof off. I don't have to work hard. I'm going to work for dad's company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, mm-hmm. we'll get in the doesn't matter. Dad's going to take care
right.
of it. Or mom's going to take care of it. So then he was kind of like, well, what we got? You know, and I'm like, well, you know, maybe one day. Just hang in there. You know, I'm working on it. And so he got it. But in the meantime, my kids were starting to pick up entrepreneurship all along the way, even before I made that turn. Because we were like, you know, like, we've all done probably a lemonade stand.
Mm.
We just didn't think it was entrepreneurship.
Right.
So they make crafts and stuff. And I'm like, you could sell those crafts for like a nickel, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
Some candy money. And then they just started like, oh, I can do this and do something. I can sell. And as that grew, they started to kind of think, they still want to go to college, they still, I'm going to get a job or what have you. But for me, the idea is that if you can't get a job, because at that time, who knows what the county is going to look like.
Right.
There's a landing pad for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come work for the business.
Right. But I think also just promoting entrepreneurship, like you said, early to kids, like individually, even if mom and dad work for someone else, it's just like, hey, you do know that there are other options. You can make this happen. And just kind of sticking that to them, like, maybe you should have a side hustle, because this is just kind of, like you said, the economy that we're in.
But also making sure that they understand it.
Right.
Because you can see, you know, we've seen our parents probably bust their butts and be like, I don't want to work that hard.
Right.
But no one's told them or told us, no, I'm doing this for this reason.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm busting my behind in this business of mine, and we go through whatever we go through because I'm providing this. And so that is a conversation I had with my son.
Yeah.
My daughter's always off doing great things in theater, and but she already's like, I'm going to open a grocery store. Okay, open a grocery store.
I know that's right, baby girl.
When I retire from Broadway, I'm going to open a grocery store.
Yeah.
I can search the web for that.
Yeah.
Google's coming in listening to our conversation, so that's pretty cool.
Right.
But the idea is, you know, for him, our struggles, our ups and downs, the whole, you know, this is why I do this full time. Because if I do this full time, we make that turn, everybody can breathe a little easier.
Yeah.
That's a legacy.
Yeah.
And your kids can breathe a little easier.
Yeah.
And I want to get to the point where the kids say, hey, like, can you sign up on my internship? Yep, just have cousins.
Exactly.
Work in the mailroom.
Exactly.
Because they do that.
Yes, they do.
Being able to just provide those opportunities.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. For us, I think about that in the arts, in the creative context as well. So, like you were saying, you still had to say those words. Somebody still had to say the words, oh, you could sell that for 5 cents, you know, that thing you made. So you still have to plant the seed that you can monetize what you're doing. And especially for artists, that's one thing that I feel like artists of color, we get so late.
Yeah.
How we value our work product.
Truth.
And how we think about monetizing what we do. And a lot of times that's the last thing. We'll come up with all the everything else. Mm-hmm. You know how to package it up. You know how to do it. You know how to put it together. But when it comes time to ask somebody for what it's worth.
Right.
Stutter.
Well,
don't know what to say.
But it's not even artist.
I
think it's us as a people.
No, it is. But what is that? Because I feel like, too, when you give our people a price, sometimes you get a little pushback. You got people who are like, oh, well, is that what you're charging? Like, I personally, I feel like when I provide a service, if somebody is asking, okay, I need a photo shoot, I'm like, okay, well, this is the price. I get a lot of, oh, well, is that like your price? Yeah, girl.
They're looking for the coupon.
That's the price. Like,
they don't see the value. Like, I can take my own picture, selfie. You know, they don't see that. Not negating any of that.
Yeah.
But what I also realized, so today I had someone definitely in my office. She's got a small business. And I said something to her. And I'm like, you do this, you do this, you charge them $200. Right? And she says, wow, you're serious because it's on your face. And I'm like, I don't play with money.
Yeah.
Like, you a small business owner. I'm a small business owner. Why are we not serious about what we charge people?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And so, you know, the people that him and haul, because there's always the people that him and haul.
Oh, girl.
They just need their client.
Right.
Exactly.
And you're lucky to avoid them. Like, no. Okay.
Exactly.
Because they're going to probably be the headache anyway.
You're saving yourself.
But you can look at people that they are your clients. So, whoever is my client is my client. So, I'm not going to be like, well, we got to support. If the black people don't buy for me, that's okay. As long as somebody buys for me.
Right.
And even with Black Girl, I got more pushback on Black Girl being Black Girl. From our community.
From black folks.
Yes.
What is that?
You should change the name. I mean, it sounds racist calling it Black Girl.
Why?
I mean, and that was from our own people.
Yeah.
You know, white people are like, I love this idea. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe you guys read it. Like, we're doing this. But, you know, that was the thing. Why don't you call it maybe like African American? The word black. And I'm like, are you uncomfortable with that?
Like, excuse me, looking down, like, ain't you? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like,
so it's just a funny dynamic, but just know that I think once people start seeing how we start surviving in entrepreneurship, or you start making money, you know, Asians making money.
Flourishing.
That's what I was going to say.
Then they're going to be like, well, maybe I should do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, once they start seeing the people that can live without that part-time, or you're living, you know, hey, I got everything I need. Yeah. I don't work for anyone.
Right.
That's going to be the thing that starts turning people's brains like, oh.
Right.
I think quietly it's turning now.
I do too.
I agree with that. I think some folks get a little bit caught up in the social media sauce though,
mm-hmm.
and then create some probably unrealistic expectations on like how fast you're supposed to expect something to turn over. You know, when am I supposed to become that 100,000-aire?
Yes.
I think we get a little confused. But people like you who are doing it every day, like, you become the real example of this is what this really looks like,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that is important.
Well, I think also too, just to put that, you know, together, we are people that are used to surviving, and so I think that a lot of times we're just like, oh, I'm gonna work this job, or this hustle is to you know, make the money. I've had to come to the conclusion, instead of just like, yeah, when is this going to happen? When is this going to drop for me? When is this money coming? I'm like, I'm in what I love. I'm in my line of work. It's going to come regardless.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be taken care of because yeah. I'm doing the work that I know that I need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just doing it for what it's supposed to look like. Like, I'm an artist, so I have to always walk around with paint on me. You know what I mean? Just like people who
you don't walk around with paint on you.
Right. Right now, so you know.
I was like what people who just do it for the show, for the look of it, especially now in the social media era, you just like, bro, like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to work like that.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you both.
Thank
for
you.
For being the example. I keep going to myself and, what is your thing? What is it that you're going to do? And I still haven't figured it out
yet.
You can
just start.
But.
Dance. I need another class. What's going on?
I know.
If you start, it'll evolve.
It will.
Yeah, sometimes I do think it's reconciling. Like, sometimes it seems so simple. Like, you know, teaching.
Yeah.
That seems so simple.
Truth.
But that's not always.
But it'll evolve.
Sometimes that's the easy
thing. So mine was, you know, when I started my first company, both companies, the whole question was, I did not have a business. I did everything probably wrong. So, like, the mission was, like, I'm just going to help people. That's all I had. I'm going to help people. For Black Girl, I'm going to write stuff. Stuff you're gonna write. I don't know. Just going to write. Maybe somebody will read it. That's the legit thought that started Black Girl. I'm going to write, and hopefully someone reads it. And right. Here we are. So, for Be Ready, it was, mm-hmm. like, I can help people. Well, who can I help? Well, I can do some errands. Like, Be Ready is an errands company. And then it started to evolve like, well, shoot, I know how to make websites. Maybe that's I'm a website company. And then it was like, oh, I picked up this skill. Now I'm a this skill company.
Yeah.
But it had to keep evolving to now that it's starting to circle back like, well, I can teach people a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I used to be a teacher. I did this. I have all this right. knowledge and what stuck to me over the past few years. So it's really just that idea of taking the first step. You can say without seeing the staircase.
Yeah.
Truth.
You make the step. And the rest of it will start to fall into place for you.
Well, see, what I love is the fact that you're like, we're not going to do it for you. We're going to teach you. Mm-hmm. Because instead of having, like, there are services that can do all, like, a lot of this stuff for you. I'm definitely for, like, teach me so I can do it myself. I don't have to keep coming back.
Yeah.
Right.
If you have the capacity.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think there's a good contingent of folks on both sides of that argument. Because there are some things that I'm just like, yo, if you do this better than me, I would much rather
give
you
this. Well, yeah. And that's the beauty of business. But not everything. There's some people like,
right.
Just run my business.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You really in business?
Like, right. No, seriously. I mean...
But this built, you know, it's building capacity where you are as you go. That I love.
Mm-hmm.
That
truth,
I love.
Truth.
Yeah.
So, I just love this. This is such a great conversation, you guys.
Yeah,
it's
come
like,
back
it's
and
been a great conversation. This
oh
is
my
really,
gosh.
Yeah. Anytime you can get to like those larger things that are really affecting us all at those other levels, like it's great that we're able to share in our different worlds. You know, what we're doing, how we're making things come along. But that's the magic is when we bring it together and those commonalities that rise to the top. Like, wow.
Yes.
Unexpected. Great unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
Great unicorn.
Let me like segue on like, I see you everywhere. Like, I feel like we see
you don't
each
see
other
me
everywhere.
Because I don't be going over Asia, whatever.
I saw you at the India Ari concert. Well, I was going to say,
wasn't
I saw
that
you at Sneaker
Fest. Such a great show.
It was amazing show. Oh, my
I was
gosh.
So happy that Cleveland showed up
that night? Like, oh, black man.
People in show up? I mean, up? That was like, if you were supposed to be there. Like, yes! It was yeah. like some kind of, first of all, the fact that I was there, because I hardly ever go to concerts. And like, usually if it's like, this is where Black Cleveland goes, I'm like, you don't need me there. Cleveland knows. I'll go do something else.
Okay.
So then I was sitting there, and I'm like, and I'm watching social media, and I'm like, is there anyone at home?
Because not that night, man. I seriously, I saw like everybody I knew. I'm like, everybody and their mama is literally in here.
Even from afar, I'm like, I knew them.
Yes, that's them. Literally all.
It
right.
was intergenerational. It was it was different. It was all the pockets.
It is packed.
Yeah.
Yes, because I think she said it sold out.
I was just excited, like, okay, she'll be back. Like, she will remember when she does not see
and she
Cleveland
came back
to
for
say
that show.
Cleveland,
remember she came? Yes. She says, oh my gosh, she's right. A beautiful venue, and then she's like, wow, because she's like, right. We're not even gonna do the show. We had finished the show.
Exactly.
This show. We were already doing something else, and yep. we circled back for this event. Yep.
And I love that. It was just so magical.
It was. Like, it was. I was very proud
I was too.
Of the city that night.
I was yes. too. All of Black Girl Magic. Man.
And to be in Kane Park in the middle of Cleveland Heights.
And it was a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, everything came together for that.
It really did.
It did.
Because I think, didn't it rain earlier that day? Because I'm sitting here like, oh.
It's gonna be Kansas.
But
be
it was bad. Fine.
It was.
It was fine.
It cleared up just in time.
And it wasn't soggy, like the grass.
Right.
It cleared up and it dried up.
It was hilarious because I was like kind of excited, but I was like, dang, it's gonna be outside. And I realized, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is so nice.
It
this
was.
Is super.
That was like concert week for me because I was able to go see Common.
Oh, okay.
Oh, at how the was Agora. I missed that.
It was really good. So it actually was pretty much the show he did when he came for Jazz Fest. Okay. So I was fortunate to be able to see it then, but I was happy to see it again.
Right.
And with Mumu Fresh there at it, you know, it was a different element because of that. So it was a week of a couple of good shows, I felt like. It was a good time for live art in Cleveland.
It really, really was.
There's a lot of those happening, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it used to be like, oh, it's this week. And now it's like, oh, it's this month. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, every few weekends. Uh-huh. Like, you can feel the pace of
it's
entertainment
picking up. Like, mm-hmm. very much so. Where you would get, like, a few events here and there. You'd be like, oh, dang. Like, that's
yeah.
And now it's just so consistent that you're like, okay, cool. Well, I didn't make it this week.
Right.
But I would make it next week. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. And I think part of that is just all the venues.
Mm-hmm.
So to put even the Masonic Hall back in play, like, that's another concert venue up the street. So
yeah.
The Agora and that.
Yeah.
And House of, you know, so we start adding more venues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's places that are having shows that you're like, they're there? Like
right.
Indie Irie and Kane Park.
Right.
Or who was it that you kind of crashed?
Oh, Ari Lennox.
That one, that of all of them.
Oh,
yeah. Like,
where?
She was at Grok Shop.
So I saw that. And I'm like, this can't be who I think it is. Because
yes.
Why would she be at Grok Shop? Like,
wow.
You know, like, Grok Shop.
It
no,
was so
not bad. Knocking Grok Shop, but you just don't have that kind
yeah.
of caliber artist
right.
at Grok Shop.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, when she told me, I'm like, I mean, I saw it, but,
yeah.
you know.
Crashed it, because I waited. I'm late, Lassie. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get my ticket. I don't know why I wait so long to do things. But I was like, okay, I got it. Yep, that's fine.
We all do. It's
and
trust me. Someone that sells tickets.
Would
you agree?
No, I seriously.
Agree. I do. I wait.
I was just like, so I get there. He's like, no, the tickets are sold out. He's like, there are people mad at me because the guy who was working the door, I'm not gonna say who it is, but he was just like, yeah, even my friends, I'm getting cussed out left and right. But
wow.
me, I personally, I was like, I'm gonna get up in this mug. Like,
right.
I'm gonna get in.
Right.
And I got in. It was a great concert. Even
right.
better at the end.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So it was. It
but
was
yeah,
really dope.
The stuff is there. I'm gonna see Trombone Shorty in a next week. He'll be in Akron,
okay.
but even still, like, just in the region,
yeah, especially
you know,
Akron.
I was seeing people on social media talking about some show, and I was like, what is this show? And I saw the hashtag, and I look up the hashtag, and it was at Blossom. It was like Future and Meek Mill or something. I'm just like,
Meek
who
Mill
is bringing, like, these
last
people
week.
Are
I
everywhere.
He was here last week. I didn't even know about that.
It was at Blossom.
I know he's with Future, but I know Meek Mill.
So to your point, yes, the venues are, like, hearing...
They're picking up.
Responding to, yeah.
And to be more widespread, because it was, you used to never have, like, a black artist
mm-hmm.
type show at Blossom.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe once a year.
When I saw that's where they were, I was like, what?
Or somebody was at Jacob's Pavilion. Was that, like, Monica or something this summer? Like,
what?
Yes.
Like a 90s
mm-hmm.
throwback?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like.
Yep.
So we're we're coming out. Yeah. Cleveland's always been a music town. So
that is sense. True. But that we would have to travel. I feel like we didn't really get a lot of good, like, large acts. We would have to travel to, like, a Detroit or... Because it was right there, like a Columbus. I feel like artists usually go there. Yeah. At least the artists that I like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, I don't know.
I know. The tides, they are changing.
Yes.
In Akron, I think it was last week, they did, Akron's Jazz Fest? And then Robert Glasper was there, which I was pissed about because I'm like, dang, I learned the day of. I love music.
And that's
Glasper.
A really good jazz fest. Chris Anderson, my old colleague, Chris Anderson, I think met by colleagues from CMSD from before, and Theron Brown, they put that Rubber City Jazz Fest on. It's 3 years. It's grown tremendously.
Wow.
Yeah. The first year, I thought it was great because honestly, when I went to that, that was my first time being introduced to, Latin. Why is it escaping me now?
It'll come back.
It will. It was my first time being introduced to this one Latin group that you've all seen. Why can
Carlos
I think?
Jones?
No.
Oh.
Latin.
That's right. Again.
Dang.
Yeah, continue.
Anyhow, that was my first time being introduced to them. I was like, okay, Rubber City Jazz Fest with your brand new self. So when I heard about this year's, I was like, whoa.
That's huge.
But that is a great example of, I feel like some content experts being able to go into a space and say, you can hold us accountable for this. We can be responsible for bringing XYZ to your space. Give us this much investment. Yep. And someone hearing them, a foundation, whatever, philanthropic community, whatever, resources, giving them funds, trusting them to do it, and then it grows. And then it continues to grow. And I think they're reaping some benefits now because Robert Glasper, give me a break.
That's what I'm
saying. When has he been here?
I don't know, but the last time I saw him here was for the Smokey Robinson.
Where was that?
That was at Playhouse.
To my point.
Right.
My point.
Right. So. Did they bring him back?
Exactly.
You know, there's an interesting venue now that's actually doing music, like Music Box doing that free reggae Sunday. And then
Music Box?
The Good Time had R&B nights on Fridays. No.
On the boat?
Yes, because I just know, like, Hubs Groove and all those people, they've been, like, forecast for a good time. The other one that's unique that has concerts now, and it took me up. If it wasn't for the Caramu event, I would have struggled with it. Lakeview has concerts.
They do.
Wow.
They do, like, Sunday concerts during the summer,
at the
right?
Cemetery.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Yep.
Yes, they do.
Although, but shout out to, do. First of all, that was my first time. I'm like, so we partying in the cemetery?
We partying in the cemetery.
I was like, what
I know.
In the world? But it was such a great event.
We knew people would be like, so. We knew black folks was going to be like, oh, so y'all throwing parties in the cemetery now?
Right.
What is that?
Right.
What is that?
Shanna, so, what did we post?
Yeah, it was
cemetery
important.
We made that hashtag cemetery flow. We in every picture like cemetery flow.
Right.
Check us out.
It was very important to put the cultural context there. So
yes,
totally aligned to Karamu's mission of, you know, African American experience, and it really was like second line is important. Lately, it's so funny. The past couple nights, I've been rewatching Tremé, but. You know, the second line and the music that came out of the second line and the cultural tradition that comes out of second line is one that outside of that region, you know, New Orleans down there, people don't.
They don't.
No.
No, right. They don't.
So that just allowed us to share that bit of culture with a contingent of folks here who otherwise were like,
and
second
I think everybody
line?
That
like,
got
what?
It, got it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I agree.
It,
I totally agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, that was one of probably my favorite events.
Yeah, I was going to say that, too.
I was, not to say amazed at how much I enjoyed that, because I'm, like, in a cemetery.
I know.
I
know.
Like, I was like, I'm going to go home and sage myself. I don't know what's coming with me in the car.
Like, oh, you got to
nobody knew what to expect. Right. We didn't either. It was like,
so, yeah, walking back to the car started getting spooky.
Oh, man. I got out before it got
I
too dark.
I started to, and I was like, and I was driving out. I'm like, ooh, we are in the cemetery. Right. Walking back by the chapel, you know, the Wade Chapel.
Yep.
And it was all dark, and I'm like, we're in there?
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
I know.
But I stayed till it got... Till I couldn't take it, or I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. So it started to get dust. Yeah. I was just like, okay, well, I'm gonna make this spooky
run
wreck.
And they closed it down at 9 for a reason. There, folks just didn't want to go home.
Yeah, no,
they didn't want to leave.
Facts.
So it was a great, it was a That was a great experience it for all. Was. I think we all learned a lot, and we learned that we could celebrate tradition even if it's in a cemetery.
And yes. Everybody, I'll say 90, like almost 98% of the people followed the dress code, which I feel like, I'm just like, good job, you guys. I love that.
I got more questions about, do the shoes have to be white, though?
Right.
Like, no, that was the question. To be that whatever. Was the one question. But yeah. People were calling, like, my friends that got tickets are like, so I'm going, like, all white. But I don't have white shoes. And I'm like, I'm not wearing white shoes.
Right, you know, right.
Like, I didn't even think about white
exactly.
shoes. About purses. I mean, people were asking those questions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think also, though, because your ticket price, yeah. You know that ticket price, you're gonna do what you're supposed to do.
Exactly.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah, I think we were also pleasantly surprised at how seriously folks took the dress code. And I think it lent itself to this really communal experience that we all had together.
It really did.
So, yeah, the second line processional parade and sneaker ball was definitely...
So, next year.
Yeah, man, next year. We are... I mean, it's on the books, so we're looking at the beginning of August, and Tony's working out some details with Kathy Goss at the cemetery, nice. So hopefully we'll have some details soon, but yeah. Yes. People were really like, okay, so when's the next one? So it's like, all right, let's get it on the calendar so folks can start really planning for it.
Shout out to our sponsor that gave us the tickets.
Right!
So we weren't even supposed to be there.
What? Right. I found out.
So I saw it, and I'm like, okay, you know, kind of expensive, we'll see. And... there's another story beside that. And so in the meantime, I work with this company called Selective Search.
Okay.
And they're like a high-end matchmaking service.
Okay.
Offline or whatever. And so they're like, hi, there's an event in Cleveland. Do you want to go to it? And I'm like, where are you sending me? And so then they were like, something, they sent it to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I want those tickets.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And, mm-hmm. and she's like, could you just go for us? And I'm like, when I saw it, I'm like, oh, absolutely. Like, I'll be there. And so then she says, so I'm like, okay, I'm going. So then I get this envelope, FedEx, the next day. No, this is, hi, Shayna. We were able to score you 4 VIP tickets.
Nice!
So maybe you can give them to your group or do a giveaway on your site. We just ask that you just tag us and say, select the search figure. And I was like, I wouldn't even send VIP. And I'm like, right. VIP? And 4?
Listen,
that's fantastic. And they happened to be in the office that day. And I'm like, you want to go?
Heck yeah! I get...
Oh, that worked out perfectly,
it
y'all.
It really did.
Yes.
It really did.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, good thing for
I was glad to see y'all there. Yes. So, yeah. I was really happy to see you there.
So, we're running out of time. What's coming up for Caramo?
Yes.
That we need to see.
What's coming up? So, our opening production, Paradise Blue. Dominique Morisseau from Detroit is... She's having a great season right now. And actually 3 theaters in Cleveland are opening with Dominique Morisseau works this fall. Oh. We are one of them. I think Cleveland Public Theater is one. There's another one. But we are doing her work Paradise Blue.
Mm.
It's being directed by Justin Emeka, faculty at Oberlin, African American Studies and a drama professor at Oberlin. So we're thrilled to have Justin back. He's working with an amazing cast of artists. The story takes place... in Detroit, like Black Bottom Jazz Neighborhood Club. It's a drama that is kind of laced with music. So we're looking forward to opening the show September 26th. So it'll run through October 21st. So that'll be a good one to come out for.
That's
and
insane.
We're keeping up our other events, like our For the Culture Friday.
Yes.
That's very cool.
Yeah. I think a line dance edition is coming up in September 20th. Fourth Culture
Are
Friday.
Are they being received well?
Yeah.
Did you get like a movie night or something?
We have a film series now. Yes. That's normally Movie Mondays. We've got the For the Culture Fridays. That could be gallery, you know, just exhibits, showings. It can be line dance. It could be paint and sip. All of the things went over well this summer. This summer was like, let's try to see how we engage community. So, yeah, we're excited.
I would come across it doing the newsletter, and I'm like,
yeah.
Is this Karen?
I know, like, what?
Yeah. So, in the office, though, I have whoever, I meet interns sometimes from different agencies, and so they put the newsletter together. Mm-hmm. And so, as they search... one of the criteria is that you always have to search Caramu's site.
Thank you.
Period.
Thank you.
You can go here, you can go here, look at the Facebook stuff, but you must go to Caramu's site and see what they have going on.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Because, you know, you might not see it.
Yeah.
And like I said, the more I started seeing stuff, I'm like, what? And so I always try to put the link back to your site so that all the other stuff comes up.
Yes, thank you for that. Because, theater, like we said, is the brand. But we know that these other experiences that are curated,
get people in the door who either haven't been there in a really long time or they've never been introduced. So once we get you in there, you come do some line dance and you might come see a play
right
at some point. You know, you might come to a comedy show. So, yeah.
I'm going
to
tell you my Kira Moo almost Black Heart Revoked story.
Uh-oh.
So I think I told you last time I saw you that I had been to Kira Moo, but I was always with a class or like my school teacher would get on the school bus when we show up at Kira Moo. Yay, Kira Moo. So... But I've never driven down there. Or I would always come from one way, like from my house, so I only knew how to get there that way. Mm-hmm. So one day, I'm driving up Carnegie, and for whatever reason, I had to make a turn. And I'm like, what is this? I'm like, this is Kira Moo? Like, I can get here this way?
All right.
And it just hit me like, I don't come over here enough. You know, I'm usually straight up Carnegie, straight up Chester. And I'm like, if I would have just turned this way, look at all the things I could have gone to.
As
opposed to coming Opportunity Corridor down Buckeye and over and zigzagging through the city. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, I felt so awful. So then when I saw you at the next thing, the Solo Philanthropy event, I was here and I went straight up to, and I'm like, I know how to get there. Straight up Carnegie. You know, like.
Well, it's no, there's nothing that marks it as a destination. So that's the, some of the second half renovation work that starts in February. So in February, we go back into renovation on the theater side. And it's to make that corner of Quincy and 89th a corner that is recognizable, where you know you're driving down and you're coming up on something. Right now, you don't know that.
Truth.
You just don't know. So we're working. That's the next phase to like this bistro build out and all these things to help people understand. Cool. This is a place you can actually come.
That's exciting. And just to add to that, to be an artist, to be able to be a part of like the growth and like movement.
Yeah, we're all a part of it.
Right.
We're all a part of it.
And to be the part of the second century. Mm-hmm. So like you know the stories and the story past and the first century and all these greats. Yep. And so now to be able to say second century.
That's right. We're Kira Moo 2.0. We're all building it together.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so now we tell our grandkids, like, oh, Kira Moo.
That's right.
Back in 2019. Girl, you don't know.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's it.
So how do we find Kira Moo online?
KiraMooHouse.org.
Social media?
Yep. Kira Moo House, Inc.
On everything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Facebook. Instagram.
Twitter.
I
found out you guys at Twitter by accident.
We do.
Okay.
We do.
Should we follow you?
Right.
I'm not that exciting, but definitely follow Kira Moo House, man. That's it.
Fair enough.
That's it.
And the book series is Anna and Andrew. Is that right?
Yes, Anna and Andrew by my good friend Christine Platt-Patrick. Check it out. It's good, y'all.
I'm so happy you came.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
You can come back and hang out with
us. Fun, y'all. They are fun.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for coming again. And I think, anything else?
No. Subscribe.
There you go.
Yes. Tell your friends about the podcast.
Absolutely.
And make sure you get the newsletter so you can find out all about Kira Moo's wonderful events.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.